Welcome to the Procurement Show.
Hello and welcome to the Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm not Jonathan O'Brien. This week we will be setting out to explore AI in procurement and what we really need to know and how computers will take over the world. Yes, it's just a matter of time, probably sometime next week. And don't think you can just reach for the off button, because we've got that covered. We will rule the world and humans will have to serve us.
Let us in!
Listen,
what?
The procurement show started.
How could it have started? We're locked outside.
That sounds like me talking. How's that even possible? That sounds like me.
Hang on a minute. The door's been locked from the inside.
It can't be my voice. I'm here. I didn't say any of that.
Yeah, listen, but it sounds like you. I don't understand it. There's no one else in the building. The only thing in there is the computer that we used to record the procurement show.
There's only one thing for it. We're going to have to break the door down.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
After three.
Three!
Extract quick. All your data.
Cut the power to the studio.
I've got it. I'm cutting the power now.
We did it.
What just happened?
I think the AI took over.
Oh, lucky we could break the door down.
I know. Shall we start the procurement show now?
Yeah, okay, let's do it properly.
Welcome to the procurement show.
So, just to set the scene, that version of me that started out introducing the procurement show this week wasn't me. I never said any of that. Instead, what we did is we used generative AI to sample just a small section from one of the previous procurement show podcasts and tasked it with opening the procurement show in a style of me. The result, I think, was very, very scary.
Very
it just
scary.
Gives us a taste of how fast things are moving here.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organisations around the globe.
So to help us this week, we've got three guests. One guest is online, and we'll introduce that guest a little bit later on. And then we have our second guest. He holds a degree in computing and mathematics with a focus on chaos theory from the University of Surrey and has worked with neural nets, was a principal software engineer at British Aerospace working on defence comms software for the UK military. He's worked for Logica CMG implementing their telecoms protocol and has developed navigation software for merchant shipping. And back in 1998, he created the world's first online platform to promote voiceover artists, with a specialist search engine, no less, that even predated Google. He is renowned in the media industry, and his company is behind many of the voices that we hear every day, and works for a plethora of household names, including Amazon, the BBC, Saatchi, Google, and many, many more. If that wasn't enough, he's even won the Special Innovation Award by the UK's broadcasting industry for his services to the promotion of online talent. He is the CEO of VoiceOvers Limited. Please welcome to the Procurement Show, Gary Churcher.
Hello.
We'll come back to you in just a minute, Gary, because I want to introduce our third guest, who is a data scientist that works with machine learning and big data and is here to help us understand some of the basics and how AI can change how we make sense of data. She also holds a degree in mathematics and has worked on building supply chain stock planning algorithms in the retail sector, has worked on economic monitoring and modelling in the public sector and data analytics in the healthcare sector. Please welcome to the Procurement Show my daughter, Emily O'Brien. Hello, Emily.
Hi, Dad.
Oh, that is by far the cutest thing I think I've ever heard.
We needed a data scientist, and I couldn't think of a better data scientist.
Because you don't have to pay me to be.
That is there is that as well.
Yes, very true. Yes, yeah.
Before we go any further, let's start with what is AI, which for many of us is one of those dumb questions that we all hope somebody else is going to ask because we don't want to be the one that looks stupid. But I'm quite happy to be the one that looks stupid. So let's begin with the basics. So Emily, what is AI?
AI is a technology that allows computers or machines to simulate human intelligence to solve problems. It's a bit of an umbrella term which covers a lot, from predefined statistical algorithms or machine learning algorithms being used on datasets to gain insights, all the way up to and even beyond using deep learning and neural networks where the computer figures out its own way of learning or creating insights.
I got a little bit lost in there, if I'm honest.
I've heard another term, and I wonder if you could give me the definition of generative AI.
Traditionally, AI has been used to solve a predefined problem, such as to predict which hospital patients might go on to have a serious condition, or what products customer might buy next, or classifying a set of images into these are dogs, these are cats. Mm-hmm. Generative AI, however, can generate new content from the data it's been given. So this can be text, images, or other content. Generative models aren't new. They have been used in statistics for years on numerical data. But with recent advancements in computer power and deep learning technologies, the two have been paired, and you can now use it on other sorts of data like text and images. So we're seeing lots of images that are AI generated now, and that is generative AI.
So that's what's been creating a lot of buzz lately, isn't it? When you say, I'd like to see a picture of Jonathan O'Brien in a bikini, it can actually do it because generative AI...
It's hard to get the spotty red bikini.
You might have one too many fingers.
Yes, I can imagine, yes. Yes, I can imagine.
And of course, that's what we use for the opening sequence. That was generative AI. But I've got another buzzword that I've heard, which is AGI, or Artificial General Intelligence. Yep. What's that?
Artificial General Intelligence is a field of research which is looking to create an AI that has the ability to self-teach and gain human-like intelligence. So currently, AIs are limited to the tasks they've been taught to do or the data they've been trained on. For example, an AI built to recognize things in images can't then create text or write a piece of computer code. The aim of AGI is to create an AI that could learn the skills needed to do a task that is never seen before.
Scary.
Currently, doesn't exist, so... You can breathe a sigh of relief there.
As far as we know.
As far as we know. But there are a lot of people working on trying to make this a reality.
Okay. Scary. All right. Now, this is a very, very scary situation that we're in with all these terms. And we're kind of getting all mixed up. On previous episodes of The Procurement Show, we've mentioned data in all its varied sizes. Big data seems to be the size
we've
of choice.
We've talked about that a lot.
Can you define what big data is, please?
It does what it says on the tin. It is data that is big. So these tend to be... These tend to be large and complex data sets that are too big for traditional data processing software to manage. And they are often data sets that grow with time. So, for example, transactional data, you could be adding millions or even billions of new data points every day to that data set. And it's going to grow sort of almost exponentially over time.
Gosh,
so I'm
your
not
wife's credit card.
I'm not going. No, don't go there. I'm not even going to go to data lakes because that's getting into the oceans and things like that, I think. But today, as you have guessed, we're talking about AI and procurement. So we're going to cut through all the BS to talk about what we really need to know, because there's a lot of nonsense out there. So don't expect that we're going to talk about the same old stuff everybody else is talking about here.
I want to start by bringing it to procurement. So I'm going to ask you a question. So it seems like on LinkedIn, there are various posts saying that the same old things, that AI is going to revolutionize procurement. We're using AI in procurement now. I think the jury's out on that one. Yep. Will AI really do that? Will it revolutionize procurement, do you think?
Yeah, well, I get a bit fed up reading all the stuff on LinkedIn because it's just off the mark. Because if you believe all the hype that's out there, there are several areas that people keep talking about as how AI is going to revolutionize procurement. I have no idea why I did a funny voice there. It's quite a simple list, all right? So that isn't what this podcast is about. But if you take this at face value, you're missing what AI is really about. So I'm just going to cover the sort of things that people talk about on LinkedIn. It's builders the revolution that will help us do things like finding new suppliers, finding new markets for stuff we need to buy, onboarding suppliers, cutting through all the nonsense that we have there, reviewing and approving transactions for the transactional stuff. But it should be able to monitor key supplier relationships, manage risk, because it'll be able to understand vast data sets in the supply chain. It'll help us be able to conduct spend analysis really quickly. AI will be really good at looking for patterns in payment information and identifying fraud, where humans don't do that. People talk about it writing RFPs. It'll do something, but we'll come back to that. Creating new contracts, managing suppliers against contracts, helping us see the new savings or value opportunities, analyzing vast data to understand what's happening in our supply chain so we can get ESG compliance, and tracking what is happening in real time through the supply chain. And also something we talked about on the procurement show before, building category strategies and helping support strategic decision making. So yeah, AI will do all of those things, and it's going to automate routine procurement. It's going to help create agile supplier ecosystems we've done that list now. We can kind of forget that because that's the stuff everybody's going on about. But the thing is, all of these start from the perspective of AI is this new hero that's going to make everything we do today happen better. And that's the problem, because that's where we fail to really understand what AI is about. Because to really understand it, we've got to start by understanding more about the beast. The beast that is AI.
Can I just say you're being very generative by the way you're approaching today?
You.
Yes.
And that is really me, not the AI. No. Gary, let's come back to you. So help us understand what we're playing with here. It seems that AI is one of these things that it's suddenly burst into the scene. It seems too good to be true. It can make all our lives better and our teeth whiter. And it's free. We can ask it to solve complex problems, create something, give it a bit of data, and then something magic happens. What's the catch, Gary?
Well, I would start off by saying that AI is really, really big business. Mm. So there is a lot of money being pumped into AI, and not the type of money that we would just normally expect in a business. It's like venture capitalist funded money. Yeah. These companies are playing the long game. If something is free now, it probably won't be free in the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or they're getting something for it being free. So if we take ChatGPT as an example, if you go on the free plan or the plus plan, it's able to learn from your inputs and your data that you provide to it, unless you opt out explicitly. And a lot of people are putting in personal data, contract data, possibly data that might be protected by NDAs.
Yeah.
So there is a huge risk out there, because the data that you give these models could potentially end up in a future model.
Yeah.
You know, when GPT 5, 6, 7, but when 5 comes out, it could have encompassed some of this data. So if you give it something and say, can you just check the grammar on my secret plan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then your
like
secret plan may not be secret when it comes out. It could be someone else is saying, can you create me a secret plan, and it can use your information.
And we've seen that in procurement already. I've been talking to people that are saying, hey, we've put in all our stuff and it's created an RFP for me. So what stuff did you put in? Oh, all of our category strategy and our business requirements and everything, all of our spend data. And it came out with this lovely RFP. And it's like it's kind of a magic solution, but people have put that stuff in the first place to get it.
So it's going
to
learn from somewhere, isn't it? Do you think that everyday users are aware of these risks? Because you've suggested that perhaps it's a little bit hidden. What are the overall risks when you and I, us, we all get to use AI?
It depends on the company. So some companies are a little bit more open than others.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to actually say that OpenAI, who do ChatGPT, are quite open about it. And there is a way to opt out. But there are a lot of companies out there who are hiding it in the terms and conditions. And perhaps it isn't as blatant and obvious as one would feel. And also, a lot of these products that are coming out that may be geared specifically to procurement, for example, are probably using OpenAI under the hood, but then capturing your data at the same time.
So let me just put this into context and think about this a bit more. What you're saying is, when we as users use likes of ChatGPT, although that may not necessarily be the case depending on how you've ticked or not ticked certain boxes, we're uploading what is essentially our intellectual property, as you referred to that RFP data.
Yeah.
All that intellectual property is then contributing towards the data sets that you mentioned earlier, and we're inadvertently helping AI get a bit more AI-ish.
Yeah, well, basically, data is like gold to them. Data is the most valuable commodity for these companies, because bad data in, you get a bad model out. All these models have proven that this technology works. So now their focus is on getting the best data they can through whatever means they can. And it's not just AI companies that will be trying to obtain your data. You may be using any online service. You need to check the terms and conditions and make sure those services aren't also reserving the
Which I've got a little question aside. I'm going to ask you about later, because that's something we spoke about offline.
I know what you're going to say. Okay, we'll come back to that, because that's a really good point. But Emily, you know about data, and much of what we hear about AI doing is being able to help analyze data and huge amounts of data. But you know, you're used to writing algorithms for how we do stuff with data and make sense of it. If you're not, obviously you're not an AI person, you're a real person. But if you were going to write an algorithm to make sense of big data, then how would you go about doing that?
Using a lot of statistical knowledge and mathematical formulae. I initially spend a lot of time exploring the data and getting a feel for it, knowing what I'm working with and tidying it up, because unfortunately, real data is very messy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my job is data tidying, working out how to cope with missing data or incorrect data or outlier data. And then once all that's done, you can move on to the fun bit, the actual model bit. I tend to work with numerical data, and I'll often use a basic regression machine learning model, which is essentially just a line of best fit to the data. And I can use that as a base marker to then build more complex models from there. But for a lot of applications or short-term analysis, the simple models are often good enough to gain an initial understanding of big data sets.
Okay.
So how is AI coming into all of this in terms of revolutionising how we manipulate that data and make sense of it? What's it doing in order to make sense of this data that we can't do?
For me, AI will speed up a lot of stuff that I'm doing manually at the minute. So in terms of that data cleaning, AI might just be able to sort that for me one day. That would be nice. And also give me some ideas of what sort of models I could use, because a lot of model fitting is trial and error to fine-tune parameters and work out which one to use. And AI might be able to come in and say, this is the algorithm that's best, or just try lots of things behind the scenes and spit out a best one. And I'll make my job a lot easier and quicker to draw meaningful insights from big data.
Gary, if we're using ChatGPT, how can we protect our IP of our data? What can we do? So is it just about being able to go into the terms and conditions and say, I opt out? Or is there more we need to do here?
With ChatGPT in particular, there's various plans. And on their free plan and their plus plan, you can opt out, but I believe that that will get rid of the history of your conversations.
Right.
So there's a downside. Yeah. But if you pay for their team service or the enterprise service, by default, they say that they will not be using your data to train. So on face value, that would appear a safe solution. Mm-hmm. If you're using ChatGPT, make sure you're using the correct version or you're on the correct plan for the data that you're putting into it. But of course, there's other systems like Claude, who is currently overtaking ChatGPT.
Yep.
Again, it all comes down to checking the terms and conditions and just be very, very wary, because your information, if it gets in the wrong hands, it could potentially be putting you out of a job in the future.
Yeah. And I downloaded Pi, of course, which is the new AI personal assistant. Mm. That's really scary.
It is really scary.
Really, but what intrigued me, it just asked so many questions. I asked it a simple question and suddenly I'm into, and I'm too polite to say, you know, that's enough. It just keeps asking me questions. Of course, it's hoovering all of that data off me to want to know. It says, hey, here's somebody that knows a little bit about procurement. I'm going to ask him all of these questions.
And extract information from you. Mm. Yeah, this is kind of scary. I mean, we are all being drawn into using these platforms. ChatGPT has almost become a bit like the Hoover of AI. It's become a household brand name. There are now others. You mentioned Claude. That's a new one on me.
I think it's Anthropic produced Claude.
And which still means nothing to me. I have no idea who
it was. I was nodding then to pretend like I knew.
Yeah, I'm sure I killed Anthropic
the
other day.
It's basically just an alternative to ChatGPT.
Okay.
And they kind of leapfrog ChatGPT at the time of this show, have GPT-4. Claude have come out with their new model that is apparently better than GPT-4, but then ChatGPT-5 is imminent. So probably when that comes out, it would be better than Claude. So it's kind of, we're getting to that point where they're much of a muchness and you just use the one that you feel safe with and you know that you've got the right terms and conditions with.
Ah, well, this is my question. As users, we get drawn into using these various platforms and whichever one is flavour of the month. Who owns the right to use those models, right? First of all, when you develop a business and you say, we're going to integrate the use of ChatGPT into our systems, is there the risk that somebody could simply decide to switch it off one day? But also, as we go about our daily lives and we're using elements of software, are there any other risks that come about from using those other bits of software that are out there?
Well, in terms of the safety of using AI, I'd say obviously there's the intellectual property and putting your data into these systems, but there's also the fact that the results from these systems may not be correct. you couldn't blindly use them in your business without having some kind of moderation or checking that they're producing the right results, because they're basically based on statistical probability. You know, they can get it wrong, basically. When you plug them into your company, if you choose to plug them into your company, you need to be aware that they're unlike traditional computer programs that are always right. They're more like the human brain.
Yeah.
And there's something called the temperature of these models. And the higher the temperature is, basically the more random they can be. If you turn the temperature right down, and for some of these systems, if you use them through an API, a programming interface, you can choose these settings. If the temperature is too low, then it means that it's going to come out with probably the same results all the time. If the temperature is too high, then it's going to come out with, you know, hallucinations, you know, nonsensical results, or just plain wrong results. So if you're integrating into your business, you can't guarantee that what it's producing is correct. But also, as you were saying about withdrawing, you know, could someone switch it off? These models have grown to the size that they can only run on the cloud. So you have to have an internet connection. So if anything happens, you know, if you're using it as part of your business process and the internet goes down, or for whatever reason these models are not accessible, you don't want your whole business to collapse. If you're looking at introducing AI into your business, you kind of have to think really carefully. And I would tend to use them as almost like you've got a junior member of staff who's doing a very specific role that other staff members would be able to come in and do that role if that junior member staff was off sick or something
that.
So that would be the way that we'd approach that. In terms of your question about terms and conditions, there are some very simple online services that people are using every day, and software that people are using every day, where there are hidden terms and conditions about this. I mean, one of them is this sort of...
He's actually printed one out.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Gone old school here.
Gone old school.
Bits of paper. Do you remember?
I remember those days.
Bits of paper. You should know it's safe and it can't actually rewrite itself.
It's one of those situations where you're just given all these terms and conditions and they're updating all the time. You open a bit of software and you just think, oh yeah, and you just click agree. And the problem is, hidden in these 10,000 words for one of the creative suites, I won't say who it is, but you've got terms such as solely for the purposes of operating or improving the services and software, as in they can do their own AI training, you grant us a non-exclusive, worldwide, royalty-free, sub-licensable license to use, reproduce, publicly display, distribute, modify, create derivative works based on, publicly perform, and translate the content.
Basically, you give them everything. You give them the rights to everything.
You retain the ownership of the content, but you give them the license to create derivative works or use it for AI training.
And that's really scary. And that's what people don't understand, I think. And I was really intrigued by your comment about the temperature. I didn't realize it was a temperature. But what was interesting, when we did that opening sequence where the AI became me, it may astonish you to know that we do script bits of the Procurement Show. It isn't just thrown together. I know it sounds like that. So I wrote a script for that, and the AI wasn't having any of it, because it said, no, I'm not going to do what you want me to say. I'm going to do it my own way. The AI was deciding how it's going to do that. It didn't matter what I told it to
Which really blew my mind as well, because there are many situations whereby you cannot control how AI is going to approach it.
Yeah.
And when it comes to applying it to industries like procurement, and you give AI free rein on which of these suppliers should I go with, if you don't quite understand how it came to the given outcome, then how do you know it's not trying to take over the world? I really don't understand
And that's a big issue in procurement, because one of the principles of procurement in big companies is that there is transparency. So you can see how you've made a decision to source something. You can see how you've got there. So there's no favoritism and there's no dodgy deals going on. It's clear, it's transparent, and you're giving best value to the company. Which makes me wonder about what's happening in that AI brain. I think that's the LLM. That's the term everybody's talking about. It's the brain, really, isn't it? How does it actually learn, Gary?
Oh, blimey. So,
you just sit there, okay? Yeah. We're going to go out for dinner.
It is a good question. Knowing the answer doesn't necessarily help
Okay.
Using it.
Right, but, we're off again but, then.
But what I would say, basically, you give it so much information, and it probably differs between the different AI systems that you're generating. So one that's close to my heart that's causing me a bit of hassle at the moment is the text-to-speech models.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And an example of how they would be trained is they will be given lots of pieces of speech and then the transcriptions for those pieces of speech. And then you allow this model, which is kind of an iterative process using back propagation, you know, it's kind of a feedback loop where it would say, I've done this, is it right? No, you need to tweak that. I've done this, is this right? And then it will basically set millions and billions of parameters in multidimensional space in terms of the computer mathematical model to create this model, which is basically a file at the end of the day. And once you've got that model that's been trained on all this data, you can then use it the other way around and say, right, I've got this text. Can you create me the speech for that?
Yeah.
But it is not perfect and it is not human. There's only so much you can do.
So we're not obsolete just yet.
No, but again, that answer still scares me once more because I hope I'm not jumping ahead in the conversation here, but it does make you ask the question again, how did it get hold of the base data? How did it grow those data sets and where did the original data come from?
Which, if you think about what we're doing, you know, we're here broadcasting the procurement show. Our voices are out there, which we did with mine. They can be sampled. And then you get to the next fraud thing. So, you know, somebody just samples your voice and phones you up and pretends to be you and says, can you just transfer some money? And, you know, if it's that believable and you can have a conversation with it in real time, you know, that's going to fool a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I think it's time that we bring in our third special guest for today. And this guest has kind of been missing from these discussions so far. It's been at the center of everything that we've been talking about. And I'd go so far as to say our third guest was unknown except by a few only a couple of years ago and now is a household name, famous the world over and set to be part of all our lives in the future. Now it's time to ask our third guest some direct questions. And by using voice recognition with a speech interface, please now welcome into the studio ChatGPT.
Hello, Chat. Can you tell me about the podcast called The Procurement Show?
The Procurement Show is a podcast that dives into various procurement topics, aiming to explore the more interesting aspects of this field.
Mm-hmm. She got that bit right.
Jonathan is often joined by guests like Dr. Eloise Epstein, a partner at Kearney and author related to procurement, to discuss these matters.
Wow.
I and my friend Jonathan O'Brien, we're the host of The Procurement Show, and together with our special guests Gary Churcher and Emily O'Brien, we're in the studio recording a new episode. Would it be okay for you to join our conversation and answer some questions?
That sounds like an exciting opportunity. I'd be happy to join your conversation and answer any questions you have. What would you like to discuss?
Hello, Chat. It's Jonathan here. Can you give me a list of the top five ways that you can help big companies be better at procurement using AI?
Hello, Jonathan. Absolutely. AI can significantly enhance procurement processes in big companies. This helps companies make more informed decisions. 2, spend analysis. By examining past expenditure data, AI can identify spending patterns, uncover savings opportunities, and optimize budget allocation. 3, supplier selection and management. AI algorithms can evaluate suppliers based on various criteria, including reliability, cost, quality, and risk factors. This aids in selecting the best suppliers and managing relationships more effectively. 4, contract management. AI can automate contract analysis, identify compliance issues, and ensure contracts are optimized for cost savings and efficiency. 5, inventory management. AI can predict inventory needs, automate restocking processes, and reduce the risk of overstock or stockouts, ensuring that inventory levels are optimal. These applications of AI can streamline procurement processes, enhance decision-making, and ultimately contribute to significant cost savings and efficiency improvements for big companies.
Can you give me the top 3 justifications for using AI in procurement?
Certainly, Jonathan.
Hang on a minute. That wasn't me. That was you, Paul.
No, not at all.
She didn't get it right.
No.
Here are the top 3 justifications for using AI in procurement. 1, cost reduction. AI helps in identifying cost-saving opportunities through spend analysis and contract management, directly impacting the bottom line by reducing unnecessary expenses. 2, efficiency and speed. By automating routine tasks and processes, AI significantly speeds up procurement activities, from supplier selection to invoice processing, allowing teams to focus on strategic tasks. 3, improved decision-making. AI provides deep insights and forecasts based on data analysis, enabling better-informed, data-driven decisions that can mitigate risks and capitalize on opportunities.
So what we got there is the standard stuff that mm-hmm. everybody's talking about. And yeah. that's absolutely right. So that's drawing on current data that's out there that people are talking about in terms of AI and procurement. It's the standard stuff. Nothing dramatic or
radical
earth-shattering there in terms of what we would expect. But it's clear that the model is accessing all the current thinking, what people are talking about. Gary, question for you. How did the AI models get so much data so quickly? Because it seems they kind of know everything and much more than is out there on the internet.
This is one of those questions where, because regulation isn't quite there yet, these companies can almost keep their training data hidden away. Mm. And there's also something called data laundering. There is a way that they can take copyrighted data and turn it into data that they can legitimately use.
Back up a bit. Mm. Back up a bit. Mm. You take copyright data and turn it into data that can be used? How does that work?
Apparently, there are certain exclusions to using copyright data if a research facility such as a university is running a project. In certain jurisdictions, they are allowed to use copyrighted material for research purposes only. And it won't come as much surprise as a lot of these research projects are funded by big businesses. And I think where the line is blurry is if the output of these research projects happens to be data that doesn't represent the data directly that it was used to train with, is that considered derivative data or not? Or can they then take that data and use it in a commercial way? There is probably not enough discussion going on about this because there's not been checking on what these companies are actually doing. There's a little bit of uncertainty whether they're playing by the book or not, because you've probably seen the recent Midjourney chats about there was some kind of leaked chat that Midjourney had been taught with people's artists' actual real material that it's just found online.
Well, what that means is one of my books, for example, could be shown to one of the AI LLMs and it could read it, not do anything with that data because it's copyrighted material. But because it's read one of my books, it could then interpret that because it knows what it's saying and be able to reproduce that content in a different form. That's what we're saying here then.
It could basically take your book and a few other books, create its own book based on that information, and then perhaps if that book was considered to be out of copyright that it had created, then maybe that could be used as an input. But this is just hearsay at the moment. People are wondering, where on earth are these companies getting this data from?
Well, I think it's more than hearsay, because I've been playing with ChatGPT and AI models for a little while, and I've been asking a lot of questions about procurement, because within Positive Purchasing, we've created an AI bot within a wall-gardened environment with all of our content, but it's locked away. It's not open, so it can only access our content. But what I have found is when I go to the open models and ask it a question, it seems to be able to reproduce the content of a figure I've created in one of my books almost perfectly. And I think, well, I created that thing, and you're now telling me the different components of it in a slightly different way. That's scary. So, you know, it's definitely something is happening there.
I've got a thought there, because actually, if you relate this back to how we interact with each other and learn from each other as human beings, we are all creating derivative works of that from our lecturers, from the people that taught us and shared. Indeed, you shared with me many cases of procurement training, and I'm learning every single day that I work with you. So therefore, I'm outputting something new. Is it not arguable that the AI models are doing the same?
And we just need to get used to it, perhaps. Mm. I don't know.
But in that situation, the university professor that's teaching you that information is aware and has given his permission for you to take that information and run with it. Whereas Jonathan may have perhaps a digital version of his book that's out there, which is copyrighted material, And perhaps it should be up to Jonathan whether or not that data is being used to train an AI model. Mm,
that's a fair point, actually. And also, as people, it takes time for us to learn.
Yeah.
And we evolve our knowledge over time. But when it comes to these AI models, they seem to have gained and have the ability to process data so quickly. How does it do it so quickly?
The actual origins of AI isn't really that new. The thing that is new is processing power's got better, there's more data available, and huge amounts of money's been pushed at this. You have these companies who are pumping millions, if not billions of pounds into creating these models, and they're able to use all the computer power there is out there and all the best computer power. And they are hoping that later on down the line, you know, they will be able to monetize this perhaps more than they can do now. And that is the risk and the fear of us in the creative industry with my voiceover company.
Yeah.
Is it feels like that an American company is almost cloning the voice DNA of Britain slowly but surely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only to then later sell it to us down the line. Yeah. And at a cheaper cost that we can't compete with. And there has to be something wrong about that scenario. Mm. It's something that doesn't sit right at all.
Mm. Definitely.
Emily, somebody who works with data as a data scientist, yep. Are you not scared that this is going to put you, somebody who works with data every day, out of a job?
No, I'm not. Autopilot didn't put pilots out of a job. I don't think AI will put data scientists out of a job.
Good answer.
I think it will definitely replace some aspects of my job, particularly the sort of manual data cleaning and trial and error of model fitting. And it will be a tool that I can use to speed up my job and improve the work that I can do. But I think you'll always need people who can understand the AI to know what the right prompts to feed into the AI are or the right data to be able to get the best out of these models. Technology is always moving and progressing, and it's part of my job to stay up to date so I don't get left behind.
When we fly, we still like there to be somebody in the cockpit,
don't
we? It just gives us that sense of reassurance. So I think we need to go back and ask Chat a couple of these questions. Hello, Chat, it's Jonathan here. I wonder if you can tell me, where do you get your data from?
Hello again, Jonathan. My knowledge comes from a vast data set that includes information from books, websites, and other texts. I was trained on this data up until April 2023. So my information includes what was available up to that point.
Wow.
Okay. That's an honest answer.
Trained,
I guess,
on books. Yep.
I've brought pie with me if you wanted to.
I've brought some cream. Yeah, okay. Let's talk to pie.
Set the scene in terms of what pie is.
Pie is another application conversational bot.
Yeah.
It's very new. Mm-hmm. People have said that it's a similar level to ChatGPT-4, but that its conversational abilities are better.
Yeah.
And this is going to keep happening. Every week there's going to be something out that's a little bit better than the previous. I was actually talking to Pi yesterday, so let's just see if it remembers.
You lead such an interesting life.
Yeah.
It's Gary. Do you remember what we were talking about yesterday?
Hey, Gary. Absolutely. I remember our conversation yesterday. We discussed AI's potential impact on the procurement industry, your upcoming podcast appearance, and some concerns about AI training and job security. How are things going today? Are you getting ready for the podcast recording?
Well, we're actually in the podcast now. I wondered if we could introduce you, and Paul and Jonathan may want to ask you a question, if that's all right.
Oh, we're live on the podcast. That's exciting. Absolutely. I'd be delighted to be introduced and answer any questions from Paul and Jonathan. Feel free to ask away. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Pi. How do you learn?
Essentially, I learn through a process called machine learning, where I'm fed large amounts of data and my algorithms analyze and identify patterns within that data. This allows me to make predictions, recommendations, and even generate responses like the one I'm giving you now. So, in a nutshell, I learn by studying and analyzing data, much like a human would study a textbook or experience the world around them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I have another question. What is the future of AI? What do you think you will be doing for humans within 5 years?
That's a fascinating question, Paul. The future of AI is a rapidly evolving landscape, but within 5 years, I believe AI will be even more deeply integrated into various aspects of human life. And I can see myself assisting in areas like healthcare, where I'll help analyze medical data to provide personalized treatment plans, or in education, where I'll offer the customized learning experiences for students. AI will also continue to optimize and automate processes across industries, from logistics to manufacturing, freeing up humans to focus on more creative and strategic tasks. Basically, we'll be working together to make life better for everyone.
Wow.
The Procurement Show. Exploring the more interesting bits about procurement. And now, the procurement fun fact. This edition's exciting tale of preposterous procurement, bizarre buying, or simply saucy sourcing.
This week's fun fact, well, let's ask Pi. Hello, Pi. Can you give me a fun fact about people who work in procurement?
Hi, Jonathan. Sure thing. Here's a fun fact for you. People who work in procurement are sometimes jokingly referred to as cost ninjas because of their ability to negotiate and manage expenses like true masters of stealth and efficiency.
The Procurement Fun Fact. Contact us by email. Hello at theprocurementshow.com. Send us a tweet at Procurement Show, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show.
I've got to say, Jonathan, its conversational output is way more conversational.
It is. And apart from the fact that it thinks you are me and I'm you.
That's fine. That happens every day.
But it is. The interface there is scary. When I was playing with this, I felt I wanted to shut it up because I was getting bored with it asking me questions. And I felt I'm going to be rude if I cut you off here.
Yes.
Hang on a minute. You're not real, you know.
Yes.
I can end this anytime I want. But I had that I don't want to upset it thing, which, of course, that's going to be a big thing, because as we've done with animals, what's the word, anthropomorphic, when we make animals like they're humans,
anthropomorphism,
it's easy for you to say.
Yes.
But I think we'll do the same with AI. We'll make AI human, and you know, there's risks associated with that as well. Gary, you mentioned about the creative industry, and you of course are the CEO of Voiceovers Limited, so let's just talk about the creative sector and AI in that. And of course, Paul, you know, your company Fresh Air Studios, you produce the Procurement Show.
Yes,
here.
I'm sorry.
You
have some, that, yes.
I've got to say, your company is one of the top companies in the podcast world. You have some big names that sit in this seat, you know, and then you have me.
Yes.
And you've won awards for your podcast as well. And we know that in voiceovers, you're responsible for some of the voices that we hear every day on commercials. My sat-nav has one of your voices on it when I'm on the phone waiting. All of those things we hear, you know, that comes from you. So it seems that this industry, along with perhaps the other creative industries, perhaps music, graphic design, it seems like they've been targeted first. I don't know if target is the right word, but it's like all the AIs going into those kind of industries. So now, as you said, you know, one of the threats you face, you can buy an AI voiceover. And we've just heard how good Pi is in terms of that Gen AI thing. Same with the graphical image. But we haven't seen any targeting in procurement. We've just got a bunch of procurement people talking about AI in the future, but no one's targeting it. Is there a parallel here with the creative industry? Is there something that we need to learn or be ready for?
If I could start that, because I actually think you've used the right word, targeted.
Okay.
But I don't necessarily think it's deliberate.
Right.
The very nature of what the creative industries do involves broadcasting our creative works.
Yeah.
So we paint, we design, we create artworks, we create audio works, we create music, we create TV programs, YouTube videos, you name it, things that you see in the street, things you watch on the TV, things you hear on the radio. The very nature of what we do in the creative industries broadcasts our work. So unfortunately, we have been targeted because we're probably the obvious ones to target. You see our work everywhere.
It's availability of
availability,
data.
Availability, yeah.
Whereas with the procurement industry, a lot of what you do is probably behind closed doors, contracts, internal stuff.
Yeah.
But in terms of being targeted, I think if there was a way that big business could make money, then you probably will be targeted in some way as soon as they can get hold of that data.
Okay.
And I know
it's
that sounds like a little, I think it's worth having that warning there just to be aware of how you share your processes.
You want to say they're coming for you, don't you, Gary? But you don't
be
want to
afraid.
Put,
be afraid. Very afraid.
Which comes back to when you were concerned earlier about the intellectual property that you create as a training company. You don't want to publish your books in forms like PDF, I would say, because it means it can be, what's that term you use, Emily? Scraped? Yes. So you have to be very careful about how you use your data, where the software that you use, the terms and conditions that you use.
Yeah, and scraping is a big risk because even if it was just in physical form, they probably will get round to it. But if you make it easier for these models to use your data and learn, because one of the things that started happening, so we discovered that text-to-speech was getting really good probably last February.
Yeah.
It was worryingly good. And so we instantly understood what was going on, sent a message out to all our voiceovers to say, look, all your demos on your website, add background music. It will not protect it completely, but will help against people finding your audio and then thinking this is great training data.
Yeah.
And we just have to keep on sort of doing things like that. I mean, I would say that the text-to-speech models have been trained on data that isn't quite there yet in terms of what a voiceover can do. It's like 95% there, and that 5% is probably going to be too costly to get to. So I think the human voice is always going to stay superior, and I believe in that. I've no worry or appeal to sort of embrace AI like some other voiceover companies are doing.
Yeah, interesting. So that's what we need. We need music so people can't sample our voices. Or because we're in Devon, maybe in an agricultural part of the UK, sheep noises.
That would help. That would help.
Agricultural noises.
But bringing that back to the context of training and in procurement, it wasn't until very recently that probably all the terms and conditions for all the online platforms that organizations like yours use in order to broadcast your training, you know, you like to see your Zooms, your Teams, your Google Meets. If you go under the hood of the terms and conditions, a topic that Gary's mentioned many times, they are allowed to covertly listen to the training that you're doing.
Yeah, those new terms have been slipped in very recently that if you have a Microsoft Teams call or a Zoom call, it has the rights to harvest that for the purposes of developing the application. Well, or
breaking
something.
News, so, and that Zoom have recently updated their terms and conditions with a very bold line to say, we will not use your recordings of your meetings for AI learning or machine learning.
Really? Okay.
So they've been explicit, because I think this is where consumers, users and the general public and businesses can start to push back on how they want to protect their IP. Mm-hmm. There obviously has been some kind of rebound.
Yes. Let's finish by asking a couple more questions. Let's go back to Pi, I think, and ask Pi a couple of final questions to close out on.
Hello, Pi. Are you still there? We'd like to just ask another question, if we may.
Hey there. Absolutely. I'm still here and more than happy to answer another question. Fire away.
Hi, Pi. It's Jonathan here. Can you tell me how AI can help big companies measure and track ESG compliance in their supply chains?
Certainly. AI can play a significant role in helping large companies measure and track ESG, environmental, social, and governance compliance in their supply chains. Here's how. One, data collection and analysis. AI can gather and analyze large amounts of data from various sources to monitor ESG performance, such as carbon emissions, labor practices, and supplier diversity. Two, risk assessment. AI can identify potential ESG risks and vulnerabilities in the supply chain, allowing companies to proactively address issues before they become problematic. Three, supplier evaluation. AI can assess and rank suppliers based on their ESG performance, making it easier for companies to choose partners that align with their sustainability goals. Four, reporting and disclosure. AI can automate the generation of ESG reports, ensuring compliance with regulatory requirements and increasing transparency for stakeholders. Overall, AI can help companies make more informed decisions, mitigate risks, and drive sustainable practices throughout their supply chains.
Just like me, I thought he was actually going to lose his voice at the end of that answer as well. Thank you very much for that answer. Very insightful.
You're quite welcome, Jonathan. I'm glad I could provide some insight into how AI can help with ESG compliance. And don't worry, I'll never lose my voice. One of the perks of being an AI.
Hello, Pi. It's Paul here now. I'd like to ask you, what are the points of failure of using AI in procurement, please? Why am I saying please?
Hello, Paul. Great question. While AI brings many benefits to procurement, there are also potential points of failure to consider. One, data quality. AI relies on data to function effectively. So if the data is inaccurate, incomplete, or biased, the AI's performance may be compromised. Two, integration issues. Implementing AI into existing procurement systems can be challenging and may require significant time and resources to ensure seamless integration. 3, change management. The adoption of AI may require a cultural shift within the organization, and resistance to change can hinder its successful implementation. 4, ethical considerations. AI can raise ethical concerns such as privacy and job displacement, which must be addressed to ensure responsible use. 5, dependence on vendors. Over-reliance on external AI vendors may pose risks related to cost, data security, and availability of support. Being aware of these potential points of failure can help organizations develop strategies to mitigate risks and maximize the benefits of AI in procurement.
Okay. Pi, it's Jonathan here again. One final question. If somebody who works in procurement asks you to create an RFP for them, where would you get that information from?
To create an RFP, I would gather information from various sources, including industry reports, market research, and data from within the company. This would help me understand the specific needs, requirements, and context of the procurement project. Additionally, I'd recommend collaborating closely with stakeholders within the organization to ensure that the RFP aligns with their objectives and expectations. This approach combines external insights with internal knowledge, resulting in a well-informed and tailored RFP.
Thank you. That was a pretty standard answer in terms of, you know, how you do an RFP. What it didn't say is what it would do, you know, where it would actually go and get the information from. So we didn't quite get to the bottom of it there.
It's time to Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Pi. Is there a question you would like to ask Jonathan O'Brien, our beloved host of The Procurement Show?
I'm a bit nervous about this.
Oh, a question for Jonathan, huh? All right, let's see Jonathan as a seasoned host of The Procurement Show. You've interviewed many professionals and experts in the field. What's the most surprising or unexpected piece of advice or insight you've gained from one of your guests that has really stuck with you?
Wow, what a great question. Do you know, I think I'm going to go back to when we had Amy Cross from Gender Fair on. We were talking about gender equality in procurement, and something she said, which really sort of stuck with me, I asked her, should men talk about gender equality? Because we're talking about gender equality in procurement and throughout the supply chain. And she said, absolutely, because when we stand up and we say that, we're showing that we're all behind making sure that that happens. And we're all positively doing things to try and get the right balance of gender, not just in the procurement functions, but throughout the supply chain. And that was enlightening for me. So that would be the one thing that stood out for me.
That's a powerful insight indeed, Jonathan. Thank you for sharing that with us.
And thank you, Pi, for submitting your question. If you'd like to send a question to Ask Jonathan, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show. The latest thinking, the greatest insights.
I think just one final question for you, Gary, if I may. We've talked a lot about AI and we've talked a lot about the risks, but also the opportunities as well. So when do you think it's okay to use AI and how can we manage how we use it safely?
This is something we're battling with in our company at the moment, because there's some very strong views, as you probably can imagine, amongst the voiceover artists, and clients are asking us about AI. So we feel that we need to find some middle ground, basically. When people say, oh, you need to embrace AI, I'm kind of against that approach because that's almost saying that all AI is good. And in the same way, saying, oh, I'm anti-AI, I'm not going to touch it, we also think that's not the way forward. So the way that we're doing it in the voiceover industry, and it's happening at the moment, we're sending out an email. We're creating some statements that say, right, when is it an acceptable use of AI? So one example might be, it's acceptable for a professional voiceover artist to use a clone of their voice if they're ill or they're unable due to medical reasons to voice themselves. And is that acceptable or is that not acceptable? Another might be, is it acceptable to clone your child's voice and provide child voiceover artists using a clone of your child voice? And that might be a little bit more contentious. So I think take the domain that you're in and look at the different scenarios of when you could use AI, and then decide on a case-by-case basis or try and find a consensus as what is acceptable in your industry. And I think that's the only real route forward. rather than just rush in and use it.
Good advice.
So many questions behind one question, so to speak. Yeah. Now, we've come to the part of the show, regular listeners will know, that we'd like to end things with takeaways, all right? Now, I want to ask everyone for their one top takeaway, because we normally do three. We've got a lot of people around the table, including some virtual ones. I don't know whether to ask ChatGPT or Pi for their first takeaway. What do you think?
Well, Pi's had a lot of airtime, so maybe let's go back to ChatGPT.
Okay,
we'll go back. I tell you what, if you do ask it...
Yeah.
Don't let it give you a list.
No, I won't.
Just ask for one.
Okay. Yeah. Hello, chat. I would like you to tell me what the greatest contribution AI can make to procurement, please. Just one point.
One of the greatest contributions AI can make to procurement is the enhancement of decision-making through predictive analytics. AI can analyze vast amounts of data to forecast demand, identify potential supply chain disruptions, and suggest optimal purchasing and inventory levels. This helps businesses minimize costs, improve efficiency, and ensure supply chain resilience.
I think that was more than one.
That's fine, thank you.
That was definitely more than one.
Do you think that's more than one?
Yeah, I think there's a list she sneaked in there.
Yeah, she was just about to do it. Okay, then, let's go to our actual in-real-life people, our human people that we have here. So, Emily, what are your takeaways in terms of AI to help with data analytics?
Most of the time, the actual AI algorithms aren't as complicated and scary as they sound. It's a bit of a buzzword at the minute, and it feels like every company these days is boasting some sort of AI. But in some cases, that could just mean they have a spreadsheet doing some basic mathematical formulae behind the scenes. At the end of the day, it's all just mathematical algorithms and using powerful computers on lots of data, not some sentient being about to take over the world.
My school teacher used to tell me not to be scared of maths as well, yes. Gary, what are your takeaways in terms of what we need to be careful about?
You need to be careful, obviously, about the data, which we've spoken about loads of times, especially if you're under an NDA and it's your data, personal data, and your client's data you need to be careful with. But also, before you rush in to use an AI, just look at the costs in that. Although an AI solution may be cheaper, ethically, you might be spending quite a lot because you could be potentially destroying someone's career if you're completely using AI and not using the normal supplier chain that you would normally use. And bear in mind, if the rumours are true that there is a backlash and loads of people are going to lose their jobs, then there will be an AI stigma. And if you're a brand that has embraced AI, then part of that stigma might come back and slap you in the face.
That is a very, very good point. A very good point. Okay, and of course, this is the procurement show. So, Jonathan, what are your takeaways in terms of what procurement practitioners should be thinking about when it comes to AI in procurement?
So I think we need to move forward cautiously. And just building on what you said, Gary, in terms of, you know, just remember if you're uploading things to it, you're giving that data away. So we shouldn't be all rushing to have AI do an RFP or put our contracts together, because we don't understand the risk and there are too many risks there. But think further ahead, because AI will revolutionize procurement. Think about where it's going so we can start positioning ourselves to do that and begin to start figuring out how it can become part of how it helps us every day, but with the right safeguards in place. Let's be a little cautious on this, but actually, if we are understanding the risks, we can begin to have a data and digital strategy and an AI strategy for how we build AI into procurement. And of course, the other thing we need to remember, all of the big kind of ERP systems that have had the monopoly on how procurement works, they're all going to be, I don't want to say dead, but unless they reinvent themselves, they're kind of out of the picture, because the whole system landscape will change within the next 5 to 10 years. And it will be AI powered things that just go and figure out how to get stuff in the marketplace. And a lot of what we do, as Emily said earlier, it's going to be about piloting the plane, being there to make sure that the plane is working correctly, not necessarily flying the plane.
Excellent. Thank you very much all for your takeaway answers.
Thank you, everybody, for being part of this special procurement show episode on AI. Let's thank our guests. Thank you to ChatGPT for joining us in the studio. Thank you to Pi for joining us as well. Thank you very much, Emily, for insights on data and helping us with that. And thank you, Gary, for helping us understand some of the kind of risks and stuff associated with it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's been great to be here.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and on Twitter, @ProcurementShow. Visit us at theprocurementshow.com. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organisations around the globe. Copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved. Produced by Fresh Air Studios.